Okay, this coming Shabbos, we're going to have the honor and privilege of reading and beginning the book of Devarim. And of course, the book of Devarim begins, Eila Devarim Asher Dibar Moshe. The book begins with Moshe Rabbeinu's final speech. And Rashi explains that Moshe accounted for the Musar he was going to give the people by identifying the places that they angered Hashem in a hint format out of the respect that he had for the people. And the Medrash explains in a little more detail that the people would literally have passed out in embarrassment had Moshe been quite direct in his words. Rav Shalom Shadron Zatzal noted that the hints didn't take the people away from the central message that was being presented. He went on to describe in detail, and using many of the stories that he has the ability to do so, he pointed out that there are many times that we can give very straight-up hardcore mussar. But the ideal mussar, he says, Rav Shalom Shadron, a man who, by the way, wasn't too afraid to offer it, he said, so the ideal mussar is the one that recognizes that there's a purpose and a hope in the eyes of the rebuked for the future. And so we turned and he explained to us that in one of the stories that he told, that Reb Chaim Kanievsky was once visited by a recently granted father and grandfather. The father, who was a father to a baby boy, was a chozer b'tshuva. The grandfather was not as yet frum. And so the father had come to ask Reb Chaim Kanievsky to be the sandik et abris. I don't know if you're all aware, but Reb Chaim Kanievsky would go from far and wide and all over Israel in order to be able to be a Sandik by a Bris. So great did he consider that opportunity. Still, when he sat with this particular father and grandfather, he pointed to the grandfather and he said, there's some Kedusha about you, you should be the Sandik for the Bris. So here was this grandfather, was not a Shomer Shabbos, who was being appointed to be a Sandik ahead of Reb Chaim Kanievsky. Reb Shalom asked, what was going on? It turns out the Reb Chaim Kanievsky says, I see a certain Kedusha in the grandfather. And sure enough, what happened? The grandfather served a sandik for his grandson. And in the middle of the bris, as he sat with the grandson on top of his lap, he was Maharab B'tshuva, and he realized, why am I in this position and what am I doing? And he made it his business to start being observant, and he kept Torah and mitzvos, and that's the way he proceeded. When the Shiloh came back to Reb Chaim Kanievsky in the future, and now both father and grandfather came to see Reb Chaim again, this time both in the garb and the lifestyle of those who were both Shomri Torah as well as mitzvos, Reb Chaim was asked, what was it about the Kedusha of the father? And he explained that when, he says, I know the answer, when my late wife, Aleh HaShalom, had come to Israel. She told me that she was a Holocaust survivor, having been thrown from the trains to Auschwitz by her parents. And as she was being thrown out, her mother had turned to her and explained, my tired daughter, I'm going to throw you off this train so that you could live. And should you be able to go and be able to be married, I want you to promise me that you're going to look and try to figure out how to build a bias al derech hatara with taras hamishpacha. The young girl wound up in Israel, and at the time that the shidduch was made, she was living in a non-religious kibbutz, and the adopted mother of the kibbutz told her, when she asked about taras hamishpacha, she waved her away with a hand. So when she got to meet the local rabbi, the rav explained what taras hamishpacha was. And when she was ready to get married, she turned to her groom, this Balabayas, this grandfather, and she explained that I have to honor the wishes of my late mother. And if that's a deal breaker, then ois mitten shidduch. And what happened? Indeed, what happened was the grandfather had agreed. There was no other Torah observance. Reb Chaim Kanievsky says, that was the Kedusha that I saw. How could I let such Kedusha disappear? He didn't give him mussar that he wasn't Shomer Shabbos, and he didn't give him mussar about the fact that he wasn't Shomer Torah Mitzvahs each and every day. He turned and he said, you have Kedusha within you. Moshe Rabbeinu does the same here in the book of Devarim. And it's important for us to remember that even in our darkest days, Tzion b'mishpatipada, there's room for a future, there's still hope. Moshe continues and he declares, Re'ei, see, and that's a lashon yachid, Nasati lifneichem es aretz, bo rishu es aretz, ko, and inherit the land. And the words bo'u rishu are in the plural. So why does the pasuk begin with a singular re'eh and end with the plural bo'u rishu? So Rav Gifter Zatzal explains that when it comes to inheriting the land, inheriting the land requires a group. But when it begins as an idea on the mind of each and every individual. The idea that, oh wait, I've got to start somewhere, that begins because this bonus is a mitzvah that is conducted individually. Each and every Jew has an obligation to think about. The carrying out requires all of us to walk around together. In one of the most famous psukim of Parshas Devarim, we continue, Eicha esalav adi Moshe Rabbeinu complains, how am I going to be able to carry torchachem u'masachem v'rivchem? And although the word masa is normally translated as a burden, in this case the Ramban writes that it refers to tefillah, that Moshe Rabbeinu was expressing his inability to be solely responsible to daven on behalf of all the nation and all of its needs. Now why is tefillah described as a burden? Especially when you think about the fact that there are so many other mitzvahs that are more difficult and physically taxing than prayer. Rav Simcha Zissel Brady Zecher Tzadok Livracha, the old Rosh Hashiva of Yeshivas Chevron, explains that when we daven on behalf of another Jew suffering and is in pain, it's not enough for us to merely daven to Hashem on his behalf. We're expected to feel the hurt and to call out to Hashem to alleviate not only his agony, but ours as well. And so accordingly, Moshe complained that when he davened on behalf of the nation, he felt their collective pain, and he described it as a masa, as a heavy burden to be carried. So Moshe was told as a response, V'ekachas Rashi Shivteichem, so he began to appoint the leaders. And Rashi notes that Moshe encouraged them with the praise, Ashrecha, how great it was to be a judge over the Jewish people. But how could he, who complained so bitterly about the job, praise it so openly to the other people? So Rabbi Neuberger, Shalita, the Rav in Bergenfield, Rashiv and Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan, quoted from Rav Avraham Yitzchak HaKohen Kuk Zatzal, who explained that the way to handle irreverence is to challenge it with increased righteousness. And Moshe Rabbeinu hoped that by increasing the ranks, he would be able to encourage the people to join him, and the tzidkus that would come would outweigh the rishus on the outside. So Moshe went and he gave instructions to the Dayanim, and he told them, Kakaton, Kagadol, Tishma'un, you should judge like small and like large. And as we learned this week in the Daf Hayomi, the Gemara in Sanhedrin on Daf Ches Amud Aleph explains that the small cases, that is to say cases of small disputed amounts, are treated in the same way as the larger ones. And so the Gemara explains that this teaches us that a judge shouldn't push up the larger case on the docket. He should judge them as they come in. Now why is this not obvious? So Rav Shachter Shalita explained that there are rules and regulations for mitzvah fulfillment. And the Gemara spells these out in a number of places. It tells us that certain rules apply to certain karbanos, that certain karbanos come ahead of other karbanos, that malim v'kodesh, that there are certain rules in terms of tadir v'sheino tadir. Unless the Dayan think that a bigger case is a bigger mitzvah, the Gemara explains that this isn't so, because within the process of setting up din, we also have a rule called Ein Mavir in Ala Mitzvahs. Rav Shechter also added in the name of Rav Kook that when it came to his waiting room, Rav Kook would often shuffle based on the Talmidei Chachamim waiting in it to speak to him. But that's not acceptable when it comes to a Din Torah. When it comes to a Din Torah, all Dinei Torah require a Dayan who's able to see them all for what they are, a dispute that's holding up Shalom that needs to be restored. Not only that, Moshe Rabbeinu turns around and he says, "V'Hashem esanaf bi beglalchem," that our God got angry at me because of you. Now why does Moshe think that the reason he didn't go into Eretz Yisrael was because of the Meraglim and the sin of the spies? Wasn't it because of his own personal Aveira of Meir Meriva? Why does he think that the difference comes into play over here? So Rav Shimon Schwab, Zecher Tzadok Livracha, notes that at multiple points in the Midbar, when the Jews complain, they always ask, Moshe Rabbeinu, lama elisanu me'aretz Mitzrayim, why did you take us out of Mitzrayim? And this was also part of the Taina at the time of the sin of the Meraglim. And at that time it led to 40 years of wandering and continued complaining, lama elisanu, lama elisanu, lama elisanu. So it's no surprise that at the end of yet another round of complaining brought on by 40 years of blame, it led Moshe Rabbeinu to snap. And that's why he sinned with May Meriva. It was an extension of the Chet HaMeraglim. And the Torah tells us that you should tell the nation, Atem Ovrim Hayom Eskvua Chechem B'nei Esav. You tell the nation that you're passing the border of your brother Esav. The Rambanan wonders, why is it that Achva is mentioned, Achechem, is mentioned specifically by Esav, not by Yishmael or the Bnei Keturah? So the Brisker of Zatzal explains that biologically Esav was a complete Ach. He shared both parents with Yaakov Avinu. Now, he chose to act with brotherhood, the choice to act with or without brotherhood in the family relationship was strained, but it certainly existed, and thus it was stressed. It's fascinating, you know, sometimes we look at the situation where God sets things up beautifully for us, and we have our opportunities for Achva. And unfortunately, we sometimes blow the inherent biological Achva and turn it into personal opportunities for Sinah, and that's even more so than when we deal with Achinu B'nei Esav. Finally, in the Haftorah this week, we are told, Yadashor koneu v'chamor evus ba'alav, an ox knows its owner, a donkey knows the bridle of its owner, but Yisrael yada amilo is bonan, my nation didn't know me, and it didn't contemplate me, so declares the Navi Yishayahu. What kind of kal v'chomer is this? After all, animals instinctually know their owners. What's the comparison to the human being that's being wrought over here? So Baruch Mordechai Ezrachi Shlita, the Rosh Hashiva Bateras, explains that that's precisely the problem. Even when we lose our way, we still should be able to turn to the instinctual knowledge of He who runs the entire world, or the Torah which feeds and sustains it. The inability to see and know Hashem is our problem, and it makes us slower, not merely different than the animals. We are in a midst of time where we sometimes feel quite low, and we sometimes turn it against one another. Our job is to really grow from that and to get to a situation where we can achieve Nachamu, Nachamu, Ami, and get to that status of a Shabbat Shalom and a Yom Shekulo Shabbat Shalom to all.